and message. Your financial sustenance is needed more than ever to continue this type of programming. As a new listener or current member, this is your opportunity to contribute to the growth of an institution that stands resolute against both gross injustice and repression and the mass erasure of history and
peace,
culture.
This is Atan Thomas, and you're listening to WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
Good evening. It's just about 6 o'clock in the nation's capital. The name of the show is News Views. My name is Garland Nixon. I'm on Fridays from 6 to 7 p.m. here on WPFW, your Pacifica affiliate in Washington, D.C., 89.3 FM. Also, don't forget, if you want to find us online, just go to WPFWFM.org. And when you go there, there's a donate button. As you know, we do not get money from public entities. You know, we don't get money from corporations and Pfizer or Lockheed Martin or any of that. So anytime you go to WPFWFM.org, if you can't afford it, it would be highly appreciated if you could take action to help provide financial assistance to keep WPFW roaring. You know, we get to say what we want here, like it or not. You know, my favorite call, I got a caller one week and I really liked it. I guess I'm weird like that. I had a caller who said he didn't like what I said. He disagreed with the things that I said, and therefore he didn't think I should be on the air on WPFW saying these terrible things. And my response was, well, we disagree, but I think you should be on the air to tell me how terrible I'm doing. See, my opinion was, you know, I've always been a First Amendment person. Let me give you the number, 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893, open lines. I've always been a First Amendment person. I remember I used to be with the ACLU for many years, and I remember we had a case in Annapolis, and the case was the KKK had applied for a permit, and the city of Annapolis said, no, you can't have a permit, and the ACLU at the time said, you got to give them a permit, and they were like, No, because it's constitutional. Constitutionally speaking, their views are abhorrent. You don't like their views. I don't like their views. But the Constitution says you got to do it. However, you can certainly have a counter protest on the other side of the road. Why? Because the cure for bad speech is more speech. Let me just say this. I don't judge a person when somebody says I'm for the First Amendment for free speech. I don't judge that by how you react when somebody says the things that you agree with. Well, how I judge that is how you react when people say things that you don't agree with. The First Amendment protects unpopular speech. So when someone's saying something you don't like, you don't agree with, you think it's wrong, it's terrible, do you still say, hey, look, I don't agree with that, but that person has a right to say it. And I then have a right to go come out and say they're wrong, but they got a right to say it. And that's because what happens is this, and we're seeing that now. We always see that when somebody says things you don't like and you allow that to be suppressed, sooner or later it comes around and you got something to say and the other side's in power or some other people are in power. And guess what? They don't like what you have to say. So we should always push for free speech, for First Amendment, so that unpopular speech is protected. 202-588-0893. We're going to the phones. Open lines. We can talk about whatever you want to talk about. Don't forget, this is important. When you call and you talk to my main man, Kalia, he's the boss in this operation. When you talk to him, don't hang the phone up while you're waiting and listen to your computer or listen to the radio because we have a 10-second delay. And when I say next caller, you won't hear me for 10 seconds. So make sure that when you're on hold, you keep that phone to your ear and you listen there. 202-588-0893, first caller. You're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Good evening, Brother Garland. It's Leo calling from Lisbon, Portugal.
Oh, man, I haven't heard from you for a while. I was getting kind of worried about how things were going up there in Portugal. What's over there in Portugal? What's happening, my main man, Leo?
Special night. Special day. It was a special day for Portugal as it marked 51 years of the Carnation Revolution, which was Portugal's transition to democracy. from a 41-year brutal dictatorial regime, better known as the Estado Novo, or in the new states, and paved the way. So the Carnation Revolution paved the way for Portugal's transition to democracy and for its colonial possessions in Africa and Asia to ultimately gain their independence. So today, you know, I didn't get to, although I didn't really, you know, get to fully celebrate the event, because this event is a very important and special auspicious day for the Portuguese. You know, there are lots of parade, there are events like, you know, big events, you know, parades, concerts, and all that sort. But at least I was able to commemorate it and, you know, acknowledge this auspicious day by wearing, by having like the carnation flower on my chest. And I do, and this event, you know, and this occasion really has a big place, a huge importance, because we're, I mean, because I'm a citizen, unfortunately, of an empire that not just has zero respect for democracy, it has no, it doesn't realize the value of democracy. These, you know, demagogues on both the Republicans and the Democratic parties don't really understand the value of democracy. Them, you know, them sticking their noses in other people, in other countries, and, you know, oppressing both at home and abroad. This really shows how things have really been under, you know, under several presidents, or I don't even know if I want to say presidents, under several dictators of ours. And I just want to hear your thoughts on that, and you know, basically share my you know, talk a bit about Portugal's Carnation Revolution as well to, you know, fellow listeners, because not too many people know about the Carnation Revolution and its significance. And I thought, and you know, the fact that I can relate to what's going on in the empire. So,
well, you know, you make a lot of good points, because a lot of Americans, you know, don't understand really what's happening on the international scale, the history of the U.S., the history of what's happened in Europe as far as imperialism, the struggle that a lot of governments have had for freedom and independence. And see, what we get here is what the empire tells us. So if the empire wants to overthrow a government, they'll just say that government has a dictator, that government has whatever, and we should try to overthrow the government. And I've always found it interesting that no matter how many times our government lies to the citizens, that Americans still believe it. That's what I always find surprising, you know, Leo?
Absolutely. No, definitely. And the truth is, the dictatorial regime here in Portugal, which governed the country and, you know, the country for over 40 years, you know, there were a lot, there were censorship, you know, oppression, you know, political oppression, basic human rights were oppressed. And I thought about the basic human rights that were oppressed in the, that have been oppressed in the United States, particularly when it comes to the pro-Palestine protests. And I'm talking about the pro-Palestine protests that were oppressed while Biden was president. And now that even exacerbated, and Trump, and under Trump's presidency, it even got worse. To the point,
you know, I'll say this. I don't think it got worse. I think it stayed the same, in my opinion. I mean, you know, for instance, Obama. What was it? 7 countries Obama bombed. He overthrew the government of Libya, overthrew the government of Syria. I don't think that when we go from president to president, it gets worse or changes that much as far as U.S. foreign policy. I think U.S. foreign policy is pretty consistent. If you look at it over the last, say, go since the World War II, you'll find that the president may change, but the people in the State Department, the people in the intelligence agencies, the people that do all the government overthrowing and all of the internal meddling, most of those people stay the same from president to president.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. But last question here, because I'm really curious to know, because I heard on the news yesterday about people traveling to the United States, you know, even like U.S. citizens flying back to the States are going to be forced to hand their devices. And there's this whole invasion of privacy. What is your say on that? I mean, airport security, wanting to check, passenger, travelers' devices against mm-hmm. their will or without their consent. Do you think that, what is your say on that? And do you think that's also like a violation of, human rights? What's your take on that?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a completely constitutional violation. I think it's government overreach. I think what we're looking at now is an empire that is falling apart, that is coming unraveled, that is collapsing. And one of the things that it's doing is it's cracking down on its people. The government has a problem, and the problem is called the internet. And people can go online and find out what they're doing in a way that they couldn't find out before. I know people for several years. I've known people, last time I went to Venezuela, some of the people that I went with, when they came back, they got stopped at the border and questioned. I know people that have gone to Cuba and come back and get questioned at the government. And it's not like that the government really is going to lock them up, but it's almost like a harassment technique to let them know, hey, we don't like this and we're keeping an eye on you. A lot of times it's more of a harassment technique than anything else. But now they're saying that people, if you disagree with what's going on with Zionism or what Israel's doing or what have you, and if you're not maybe an American citizen, they could literally throw you out of the country or not let you in the country. It's getting, it's just getting worse and worse.
Yeah. Well, let's hope we all continue to fight for, what's right. Mm-hmm. And I just hope that,
I've got to get ready to jump. We got a couple more callers, but thanks a lot. And good luck. Best of luck there in Lisbon. And wish I were in Lisbon. Things ain't so great around here. All right. 202-588-0893. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Hey, what's going on, Garland? It's Max calling from Maryland.
Talk to me, Max. What's happening, brother?
I disagree with you immensely when it comes to the immigration enforcement of the Trump administration. So around this time last year, Biden had more deportations in sheer numbers. Yes, that a large part of that was border crossings were still significantly higher. Trump is most definitely launching one of the most Gestapo-like enforcements we have seen in decades.
I agree with you. Violation
of due process.
I absolutely agree with you.
It's fueled by racism. Like, Stephen Miller is like an unaffirmed Nazi. I mean, he has been the Southern Poverty Law has literally said that he promotes like the most egregious, like great replacement theory type. I mean, I guess I'm for their First Amendment right to say it, but I mean, they're defaming people's names. Look at Kilmar Abrego Garcia. He's the final judge ruled that he wasn't an MS-13 gang member or a criminal, and that he had a withholding of deportation. And Trump is literally like slandering his name on the White House, writing fake MS-13 tattoos and all that.
I agree with you. Look, it's absolutely abominable. It is a crime against God and nature. What is going on right now as far as, I'll put it to you like this. Look, if someone is in the country illegally, there are certain rights if they have the right to claim refugee status, then they should get their due process to claim refugee status. If they are in the country illegally, the government does have the authority to deport them. I'll give you that. That's the law. I can't change the law. But the Trump administration is just going, you know, it's a political issue with them. It is something to say to their base, look how hard we're being on immigration. So it's not, to me, it's more of a political issue. It's also about this. Our economy's crap. It's going to heck. Neoliberalism is not working, and it's just destroying the working class and the middle class, and they need a scapegoat, and the immigrants are the scapegoats. That's a big part of it, too.
I would say this: a long term, if the numbers really start to manifest, it's actually going to probably hurt the economy. And then I would also want to say, so yes, expedited removals in terms of, like, I think, like, if it's like 14 days border, not necessarily due process, but incarceration, right? What he's doing with Bukele, oh my, that is absolutely against the law. I mean, that is absolutely egregious. Obama may be the chief in deporter, but he wasn't incarcerating people in prisons. And then specifically in Obama's last year, right? His last year, interior removals cut significantly. Obama literally in his final year made it so that most of the removals were border, but he changed the rulings to where, like, well, he changed the executive enforcement to where a lot of people on the inside weren't getting deported as much unless they were really violent criminals. Each of Trump's first 3 years, the interior removals, right? The border removals did remain lower than Obama, and Obama's peak numbers Trump never eclipsed. But specifically in comparison to Obama's last year, Trump's interior removals did increase. So it wasn't.
Let me say this one thing to you, and that is because, as you know, I am not a fan of Trump by any stretch of the imagination, and I have a lot of issues with Obama. Let me tell you one big issue I have with Obama. Obama signed a lot of the laws into effect that gives Trump the authority to do the things that he would. I was with the ACLU in 2011. Let me read from an ACLU release. President Obama, this is 2011. President Obama signed the National Defense Authorization Act into law today. The statute contains a sweeping worldwide indefinite detention provision. All the indefinite detention stuff and all worldwide, Obama signed that into law. So the reality is a lot of the horrific policies, the things that Trump is able to do and is pushing, is because prior presidents, George Bush did it, Obama did it, president after president, they would give more horrific power to the executive branch. And when the next guy came in, he gave them more power. Yeah, and so that's the problem. That's why I say, dude, I'm not a Democrat or Republican. I hate both parties. They both continue these horrific policies. And when you see a president doing things that you disagree with and you don't like, and you look at the guy before him, and at the time he signed it into law. Anyway, you get the last word, and then we're going to jump to another one. Go ahead.
I don't agree necessarily with Obama signing that into law. I think I would just simply say that, like, Trump, based on what I've researched, he's the first president of the last 25 years to directly violate both a federal judge's order and then a Supreme Court judge's order. And I would just kind of follow that up with, like, you know, just because someone I don't like or someone who I voted for or would vote for did something I disagree with, right? Like, remember, life is like a test. You grade tests based on scores. If we were to put all candidates into a metric-based system, I still think I'm confident enough that I could beat most people in a debate that Trump is the most catastrophic candidate in modern American history.
Well, I'll put it like this. I draw my line at genocide. Let me one more part of this paragraph. President Obama's action today is a blight on his legacy because he will forever be known as the president who signed indefinite detention without charge or trial into law, said Anthony D. Romero, ACLU executive director. The statute is particularly dangerous because it has no temporal or geographical limitations and can be used by this and future presidents to militarily detain people captured. So here's my point. We just keep going downhill, and one president after another signs it into power. And when it does, somebody says, you know, the next president's going to have this power. You probably shouldn't do this. Oh, no, we need to do this. And that's why we keep going downhill. And that's why I'm an independent. I don't like any of them. Right. But
can I,
appreciate it, and I'll give you – but look, we got to go jump to the next caller. So I'll talk with you later. 202-588-0893. Next caller, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
You know, the last conversation that you just had, brother, is the reason why I keep telling people never worship a politician. Every last one of them, regardless if they're Democrat or Republicans, they fight in public, party behind the scenes, live the lifestyle of the rich and the famous off the taxpayers' dollars, and laugh at the poor people that they go, that they put through hell right now. Now, one of the reasons why I call tonight is that, you know, I'm getting more and more disgusted with the black leadership right now. Now, I got a 78-year-old family member that's facing eviction. She's been calling Westmore's office on multiple occasions. I tell her, stop calling. You're not a major story. He's not going to help. And, you know, this whole situation of the, you know, of seeing citizens, I can't stand to see a senior citizen, disabled, or vet homeless. I can't stand to see that. And the best way that I always feel to help them out, if Trump is going to pay these women to have babies, and we all know what that's about, then he can at least do a basic universal income and something that Elon Musk is for, at least start off with senior citizens, vets, and disabled, so they would not have to go through the hardships that they're going through, because I feel like they need it the most right now. But no. These elected officials, they want you to believe that, you know, they want you to worship them. They want you to believe that they're for you. And again, none of these elected officials care about you. And the only reason why they care about the deported guy right now, because he's a major story. And the only
how about this?
The only reason why they keep on making a big deal about him, because it's a mainstream news media story. It's a midterm election, so the gullible voters can vote for them, and you put them in office, and your life is still hell. Isn't that right, Westmore? And by the way, Westmore, when the day comes, and hopefully she don't get evicted, I certainly want to see Westmore's face to come to her little eviction party, because then so the mainstream news media can see just this Barack Obama wannabe and all these other elected officials, the gutless hypocrites that they are. They're all a number of fakes and phonies as far as I'm concerned, brother.
And, well, here's the thing. You got to add this to it. What did they just do? Firing all of these federal employees, right? They added $130 billion to the Pentagon budget. $130 billion increase at a time when they're like, at a time when the government's literally saying, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? We've got this terrible debt. We're not going to be able to pay even the interest on the debt. What are we going to do? They had $130 billion. And let me ask you this, Mike. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When Trump proposes it, do you think anybody, Democrat or Republican, is going to stand up and say, we can't give another $130 billion to the Pentagon for war because we've got poor homeless vets and people? No, they ain't going to say a word. They all going, but all the parties going to get together and vote for that, brother.
Of course they are. Like I said, they fight in public and they party behind the scenes. They laugh how stupid and gullible the American voter is, because the mainstream news media turned these hypocrites into the worst thing on the planet, a gutless, heartless, dumbass celebrity. And that's why that's the reason why they get nothing done right now. They brainwash us to fight each other, Democrats versus Republicans, Democrats versus Republicans. You know, they say Hitler used to laugh how stupid the voters are. Oh, they believe anything you tell them. And I think that's what the public is doing right now.
You know what I call it, Mike? You know what I call it? We got a couple callers. Well, look, I'll tell you right now, it's like the one less detention center. You know, people say, I'm going to put people into detention camps on one party, and the other party says, yeah, but I'll do one less detention camp. All right, well, vote for them. They're going to do one. They're going to put us in one less detention camp than the other party. That's how it is. When you get to the point where you're always doing the lesser of two evil, at some point you get to the point where one guy's saying, I'll use one less detention camp. You know what? I'm going to cut both legs off. The other candidate says, well, I'm only going to cut one of your legs off. Well, see, this party's better. He's only going to cut one of our legs off. That's what they have boiled us down to, that we're going to get the lesser of two evils. But what we really get is the evil of two lessers. You get the last word.
And you're absolutely right about that, Garland. But, you know, no matter how many times that you say that, people don't want to listen to that. I guarantee the moment I get off the phone, you're going to have somebody calling in either the worshipers of the Democrats or the worshipers of the party. They're going to talk about why their party is better than the other. They all stink. Peace, brother.
All right. Thank you very much. Next call, you're on air. Next call, you are on in the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from? Oh, next call, you're on the air. Are you there? Well, I guess that caller's not there. Okay. All right. We got another caller. All right. Next call, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yes. Hi, Louise in Baltimore.
Hi, Louise. And speak up. I know you. I remember you, Louise. You're the woman with a very soft voice. So speak up nice and loud so we can hear you. What's happening, Louise?
I think the people that know me would totally disagree. That's on the radio I am. But what I wanted to say was three things. One, just a point that Cash Patel, I believe, was under Obama, was first, under Obama. So everybody's complaining about Cash Patel, but Obama was the one, Obama administration was the one that hired him in the first place. But what I wanted to ask you about is, what do you think about this recent bill? Is infuriating me that the Maryland legislature just passed, and I believe, speaking of Governor Moore, he must have signed it, basically reducing the amount of money that a victim of sexual abuse can sue for.
You know,
did you hear about that?
No.
I think it's purely disgusting. And this is a Democratic majority, legislature.
Okay, Governor Westmore signs law reducing compensation for child abuse survivors in Maryland. I'm looking at it right now with the state's financial interest in mind.
Yeah,
it'll be limited. Respectively, claims against government entities will be capped at $400,000. So now they're saying if the government, I'm thinking about. I tell you what it makes me think about. There was this up in the Towson area. There was this child center that they had, and a whole bunch of people got sexually abused there. And like one of these places I don't know if it was a detention center or what it was. And so I think a lot of the adults were suing. I don't know for sure, but I bet that's what it's for.
No, it's
because
more,
what they say is, what they say is, it's capping. That what you can sue this the maximum damages can seek against private institutions will be limited to $700,000. Respectively, claims against the government will be capped at $400,000. They're reduced. So it's bottom line, they're looking out for the system. Why do you have to make it lower for private institutions, and why for the state? Because they don't want to pay for the dirt that they did.
Well,
go ahead.
Not only that, but instead of doing the right thing and making sure that these children don't get abused in the first place, the people don't get sexually abused in the first place, what do they put their efforts in? Reducing their right to the compensation. That's the only way you can hold these people or these government or these corporate interests accountable. But yet, what do? They protect themselves, and they protect the corporate interests. And this is this is what people get so infuriated about. They still are like not listening to people, and they're still going trudging ahead doing what they normally do, and they're not tone deaf.
Listen to this. Among the impacts, the amended law eliminates per incident, meaning one limit of pain and suffering damages, no matter how many times the individual was abused by however many people in the same institution. So now they could be abused for years, 1,000 times, once a day for 10 years. They can only sue for one incident. Again, what is that? The state don't want to pay the money. They don't want to be held accountable for their dirt. That's all that it even says. Here's what he says. Westmore says they're going to allow survivors to seek justice, quote, while preserving the long-term fiscal stability of the state. So it's about state not want to have to pay for the things that that they've done. It's terrible. I'm glad you brought it to our attention.
And then just one other thing, if I may, I wanted to just talk about the irony of Trump being a felon because he lives in Florida, and I think they put it on the ballot that people got to vote on whether felons could vote or not, and it passed overwhelmingly in Florida, and without that, I don't think Trump would have been able to vote because he was a convicted felon. So they're getting the benefit of, you know, of the liberal, you know, the liberal, liberal. I can't even think of. I'm getting my brain messed up right now, but Trump and them are getting the benefit of all the policies, the liberal policies that they're criticizing.
My belief is this. The laws don't even apply to rich folks anyway. Rich folks don't worry about those kind of laws because for the most part they ain't got to worry about it. None of that stuff applies to the rich. That's for us. That's to give us the fake idea that there's some kind of rules and there's some kind of order. There ain't no rules and order. If you're rich, you don't go to jail. You walk. If you're poor, you steal a candy bar from 7-Eleven. You might get the chair. We've seen that for years. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate the call. 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. We got open lines. Next caller, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is hello. It's Darnell. Calling from Alexandria. I'd like to thank WPFW for actually presenting us with this platform. I think that everyone should continue to contribute because there's nowhere else that I know of that you can actually have this access to the media. And I'd like to thank you, Garland. Hey, but I would like to have you comment on AFRICON, Langley, his testimony.
Oh,
and
Lord.
Also the brother,
Ibrahim Traore.
You know what I'm talking about? That's it. I couldn't think of it. I appreciate that. Could you give us some insight on that?
Well, okay. So Ibrahim Traore is the leader of Burkina Faso. He wants to lead the people of Burkina Faso in independence and freedom. He wants to lead them. So now that they've hopefully freed themselves from French imperialism. Okay. So old Uncle Tom, that's what I call the General Langley. Oh, just another old Uncle Tom whose job is to go to Africa and to keep the black man down. The empire knows how to do that now. See, they're slick. They're like, hey, how are we going to keep the black folks down in Africa? Well, I got an idea. We'll put an old Uncle Tom in charge, and then he can beat them with the whip. It's like the slavery days. They put the whip in the hand of a black man, and then the black man will beat the other black folks 10 times harder than the white guy would have that was running the slavery. And that's what I think of this old Uncle Tom Langley. That's exactly what I feel. And he's over there the other day saying, oh, yes, Ibrahim Traore, why he's a bad guy, and he has to be. Why? Because that's what his masters told him to do. And then what happens? In the last couple of days, somebody tried to overthrow Traore in Burkina Faso, but they were able to stop it. So that's what I think of him. And I even heard a black person say to me one time, yes, I'm so proud. We've got a black general in charge. I'm like, a black general? So they put the whip in the hands of a black man to beat the Africans, and you're proud? I just assumed that they have it in the hands of a white guy. It's humiliating, embarrassing to me that they would take a black man and use him to abuse our black brothers and sisters in Africa. Your thoughts?
They actually have a history of that. And with Colin Powell, when you talk about Condoleezza Rice, they put a black face on the killing machine. And we can also talk about Obama, who had, five wars under his regime.
Overthrew Libya, the richest black country in Africa, Libya. Barack Obama overthrew that country. But he was a black man with a beautiful wife and two beautiful children. And we're supposed to feel good about that, regardless of the fact of his foreign policy, of the bombs, 26,000 bombs, the seven countries he bombed. We're supposed to forget about all of that. The laws that he passed that hurt our rights, we're supposed to forget. We're supposed to love Barack Obama because he has a beautiful wife and two beautiful children. They're slick. They understand what they have to do and what they have to put in front of us to convince us that, you know, things are looking better for us.
I just have one more thing. I've asked someone, a lot of Obama supporters, I asked them to name me the things that they actually have, that Obama actually did for black people, besides give them hope, because hope don't pay your bills.
You're right. But hope is hope. Let's think about it. What is hope? Give me hope. You know what? If I go to the grocery store and I say, hey, here's my groceries. And they say, okay, sir, what's that in your hand? And I say, hope. They're going to say, brother, you got an empty hand. That's what they gave us. He gave us hope. But guess what? Hope don't buy the best. And I don't know, the hope doesn't seem to have run out, because how things work out after he left and even while he was there. I'm no fan. I think he was put there to mark time. The economy had crashed. Everybody was like, what in the world's going on? 2008, the economy's crashed. Everything's falling to pieces. So they're like, hey, let's put a black man. That'll keep their mouth shut for a while. And we can celebrate his blackness.
Also, the Republican Party put a black man ahead of their party too.
Oh yeah, if you remember Michael Steele at the same time. Yeah. So they had Obama. That was what was popular at that time. Things were going bad, looking horrible, so they put a couple black faces out there. Same way they put Langley in front of General Langley in charge of AFRICOM to abuse and degrade and oppress the black people in Africa, and we're supposed to celebrate it. Oh, I feel so good. There's a black man now abusing black folks. Yeah, I don't feel good about that, tell you the truth.
Oh, I totally agree with you. It's Buffalo Soldier routine.
It's an old trick. If you ever watch the old Root story, Chicken George, he's out there to get his butter biscuit and with molasses. And all he got to do is keep his own people down. And you know what? To be quite frank, that's an old empire system. Let me give you an example. Right now, who is the U.S. and the Brits trying to get the fight? Yeah, can you hear me? They're trying to have the North Koreans fight the South Koreans. Oh, I don't know if I lost you, but did we lose our brother? Okay. All right. So they're trying to get the North Koreans to fight the South Koreans, right? They're trying to get the Slavic people in Ukraine to fight the Russians, right? They're trying, if you go all over the world, they try to get the Taiwanese people who are Chinese and the Chinese homeland people. We got to get the Koreans to fight the Koreans, the Chinese to fight the Chinese, the Slavics to fight the Slavics. Oh, wait a minute. We got to get the Shiites to fight the Sunnis. So we got to get the Muslims to fight each other. It's the game of the empire to go around the world to find the North Koreans and the South Koreans, the two different factions of Islam, two different factions of Slavics, two different factions of Chinese, and get them to fight each other. Well, guess what? They do the same thing here. The same game as in America is to find the working class. We're going to need the white working class to fight the black working class, to fight the Latino white working class. Oh, but what about the women? We need the women to fight the men. It's always divide and conquer. That's the game to keep us from looking at the ruling elite who are giving us all the shaft and robbing us blind and destroying our way of life.
I totally agree with you. And I think a good thing to actually study why we're in the situation that we're now. We should just go back a couple hundred years and look at colonialism. It was brilliant. It was demonic, but it was brilliant. Divide and conquer, which you just spoke on. I'd like to thank WPFW and yourself, and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. Americans don't understand that. The Americans don't understand that. They don't understand. All you have to do is look and ask, why is it that they're trying to get the Shiites, Muslims, to fight the Sunni Muslims? Why is it they're trying to get the North Koreans to fight the South Koreans? Why are they trying to get the Ukrainians to fight the Russians? They speak the same language. Ukraine is a dialect of Russia. Why are they, you go around the world, and it's always, if they'll go to a country, and if there's two tribes, let's get this tribe to fight that tribe. It's always the same thing. We go in, the U.S. or Britain goes into the country, oh, let's go to Pakistan and India. Let's get the Hindus to fight the Muslims. We always go in, we divide the groups up, the ruling elite of the U.S. and Britain, and get those groups to fight themselves, and then come home and tell us stupid Americans we're standing for independence and sovereignty and democracy, and the stupid Americans believe it while they're doing the same thing here. 202-588-0893. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
I think I'm the next person.
I think you're the only person. What's happening?
First of all, I really enjoy your show. Second of all, I had a question that I wanted to ask you, but you bring up so many flags and so many things I would like to say something about that makes me forget my point. But I'm going to try. And what it is I'm glad that the gentleman ahead of me mentioned about Traore in Burkina Faso. And I'm glad that you're talking more about international issues, because I think that if Americans can't see the parallels within their or the situations that happen within their own country, maybe it might be easier if they learned what was going on around the world and they could see maybe similarities to what's going on here. And you brought that point out, and I appreciate that very much. And I just wanted to humbly make the comment that to suggest to your readers, and I also want to get your comment on this too, that they should pay attention if they haven't to what's happening in Burkina Faso with Traore and the whole Sahel AES states that are building up. The reason why is because I think they need our support. I don't know if support is what will keep them from disappearing from history, from this earth. I hope they stay. They're doing some amazing, amazing things that if they happen, well, it could have a great change for Africa and consequently for African Americans. But I just wanted to say, what do you feel about how maybe, I don't know how, I was wondering, what do you feel about how Traore is handling himself vis-a-vis the pressures that he's getting, enormous pressures, which other African presidents haven't been able to stand up through, the ones who wanted to. How do you think he's handling that? And do you think, how do you think he's going to be successful? And
well, I'll say this. I think he's doing a fantastic job. I think he's a brilliant leader. I think he is a brilliant young man, and he's doing a wonderful job of leading his country. I think he better watch his back. Apparently, they foiled a coup in the last couple of days. But when old Uncle Tom Langley, the puppet for U.S. imperialism, is in front of Congress talking about how bad he is, we know that the U.S. empire, they want to use their blackface puppet to go try to depose him so they can go in there and they can steal the gold, and they can steal the uranium, and they can steal all of the natural resources out of Burkina Faso. The thing that, just one more thing before I go. I tell you what I don't understand, and maybe you can help me. How the American people, that's what I don't understand. When the American people see, all they got to do is look at Vietnam. All they got to do is look at Iraq. All they got to look is the many times that they've been lied to over and over by their government. And when their government says, the U.S. government says, yes, we've got to stop, go stand up for this country for independence or sovereignty or democracy or whatever lie it is. Why is it that the American people still believe them? That's what I don't understand. You get the last word. Go ahead.
Oh, my God. I don't know how to answer that. Sometimes when I looked at that, I think it's because what people think is important in life is whoppy screw. And they follow those things and get mixed up and waylaid. And there aren't very many leaders. You know, you're a leader and talking about these things in such a in your own best, honest way.
Let me throw something else. One last thing I'll throw at you. You know what I think it is? I think it's like the child who one day the young guy, teenager, and the police come and they grab his father and they arrest him. And they say, I'm sorry, your father's a serial killer. And he says, I don't believe it. Not my dad. Yeah, we got all the evidence. He's a chainsaw killer. He's killed 15 people. No, Dad didn't do it. I don't want to believe that. It would be emotionally painful for them to believe that their father was the chainsaw killer. I think that's the American people. That when America says we're standing up for democracy in Ukraine, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You don't believe that. Oh, we're standing up for democracy in Taiwan. And I'm like, no, please don't tell me you believe that, Americans. And Americans believe it. And I'm like, people who literally know of all the countries that America has overthrown democratically elected countries, overthrown the countries, replaced the leader of the country with a brutal dictator, slaughtered thousands and thousands of people, people who know this. And they still believe that America has stood up for democracy in Ukraine or Taiwan or whatever.
What Obama was saying about, what was that, American exceptionalism?
Oh, Lord.
That we're really very good people. Look at us. We have this wonderful constitution. We've created the middle class. We're such wonderful people. I mean, you know, stories that the movies would tell from the 1940s or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let me get running. I appreciate the call, but I got a couple more callers. 202-588-0893. We've got some open lines. Next caller, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from? Next caller, you are on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay. I just want to say this, man. This whole Ukraine thing started, man, way back when, you know, back in like the 40s after World War II.
Yes, it did.
For real. You know? And you know about that, you know.
Yep.
And then also, too, as we go up into what situation we have now, Putin has all the cards, you know.
Yep.
He holds all the cards. And guess what? And he's short, you know, because guess what? Way back when we had the Cuban Missile Crisis and everything else, okay, we were in a situation, okay, we had to stand up and do something, you know, and when we look at the situation that we look at right now, you know, that one of the best things, because I listen to you on another platform, you know, if Trump wants to decide to just step away, he can step away. But there's no negotiation, you know. You put NATO on their border.
Yep.
You did this. You put NATO on their border. You did what you did, you know, and the whole nine yards. You know,
well, you know, I agree with you. This is what I say. You know, this is what kills me about Americans believing this stuff. What would they do? What would America do if all of a sudden the Mexican government was loaded with Russians, and all of a sudden the Russians started building bases and putting missiles in all over Mexico? And it was Russian soldiers running all over Mexico, and Russia was bringing in tanks and planes, and Russia was arming the Mexicans. What would the United States do? The United States would go to war. If I was president, I would. But we supposed to do that to Ukraine on Russia's border, and you think Russia's not going to go to war? It's foolish.
But see, Garland, here's the thing. You know, as me being, you know, former military, not Marine Corps, you know, and being in law enforcement. And then, you see, we got a dynamic out here where my people say, well, you're on the right side. No, I'm not on the, I'm on the fair side. Because guess what? Way back in 1979, when I was coming out of high school, going to the court, first day, it was good on the Soviet front. It was this, that, and other. We would do chants in the Marine Corps, you know, about killing Russians. I'm like, well, wait a minute. And if you were smart, if you said, no, that's not going to happen, you know, even back then. See, this whole thing has been a propagandic front, you know. Biden was a part of it. We got money going to Ukraine, the smoke bill. How the hell we can fix the water in Flint, Michigan, and down in Mississippi, you know?
Yep.
And how
we got nothing for the people here.
And how come we can't? Because guess what? You know, Biden sent all his money overseas. He did all this other type of crap, you know, and everything else. And I'm no Trumper. Believe me, I'm no Trumper. But I believe in fairness. I'm like, look at what we got to go. And then you want somebody to say, okay, well, we're going to go ahead and ramp up like for the next 2 years and have a pause in Ukraine so we can get our resources together to send our troops over there. No. They're smart, like Yogi. They're smarter than the average bear. You know. If an E5 like me in the Marine Corps can say, "Hey, I'm not gonna have a company or a squad go over there and do this, that, and other and everything." Hell no. Some of these other cats gonna say, "Uh-uh." Because guess what? Even still to this day, Garland, we have cats that been to Afghanistan and been to Iraq that do heinous things to their own selves. About how heinous war was, okay? A lot of people don't. I mean, let me say this one more time. They commit suicide because they were not ready. They thought they were ready, but they were not ready to deal with a situation where somebody is going to defeat them for their homeland.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Look, if you're fighting on somebody's border, you're probably going to lose.
If you really think you're going to give somebody a $2,500 or some type of bonus and this, that, and other and everything else, no. Because guess what? And then guess what? The younger brothers and sisters do their research. They do their research. Mm-hmm. They do their research, and they see the economy crashing. They see everything else going around them and everything else. And guess what? When somebody say, be all you can be, or we fight with us and this, that, and all these little postboards you see on the highway and everything else, the people say, hell no. But see, the first thing you got to understand is this. When you were listening,
I hate to cut you off, but we got a couple more callers, so I got to hit my next caller. Thank you very much. The number is 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. Next caller, you are on the air. What's your name? Where you're calling from?
This is T. Berry from Upper Marlboro. How you doing?
Hey, wonderful. What's happening?
There's a whole lot happening. I just think that from the beginning of your program, I think I've had a little bit of an epiphany. I think there should be discussion everywhere in our media, not just on your program with people who really disagree with each other. I heard a prior program to yours talking about RFK and all these things, and it used assumptions without really putting in to the fact that we're getting our facts from the pharmaceutical company, which is, yeah. I mean, they're making up stuff. When he stands up against these folks, RFK looks pretty good. I also think, for example, Israel knows United States media manipulation. When the Pope died, I said, wonder what kind of nasty thing they're going to do or justify here. Because when they can get the media on something else other than their evil, they do it. And when the Pope died, I'm sorry that the Pope died, but unfortunately for Palestine, that means that they can get killed more easily, and they're already ignoring them, but they really have a lot to ignore when that happens. So we have a media problem in this country. I think that when I heard that that ESPN, Black commentator was gone. They don't want an image of a black man who's independent and who tries to use facts in everybody's favor. They don't want that kind of an image in the United States or in Europe. So I thought that something would happen to him, and maybe it's just me, but it did. And I think still that's going to keep going. I think that I may have some bias against them. I think that the fact that they had in Africa during the COVID crisis such statistics, mm-hmm. I was wondering where they came from, and it came from the United Nations, and somebody paid for it, and it was Bill Gates. So you can't help me but be suspicious that they weren't releasing these stats, maybe because it showed that the vaccine really, when you used a correlational thing, was not really effective, because the more vaccine you had, the less deaths you had. And this is something they would not discuss in the United States. If you try to discuss statistics, they'll call it misinformation or malinformation and take you off of Facebook.
Twitter, whatever. Yeah. You know, here's the thing. My opinion, and because I really believe in free speech, you know, I remember, to me, I believe if the government has a policy, I don't care what the policy is. The people not only should have a right, I believe the people have a duty to question government policy. As long as it's a reasonable question, people should have a duty. If the government says, I think everybody should do X, I believe that people have a duty to say, well, we want to know why we should do X. And if somebody's like, I don't think we should do X, I think a person has a right to say that. You may say, that's crazy, I don't agree with it. But I would defend that person's right to say, I don't think we should do X. You can think it's crazy, but give the person a right to say that for as far as free speech. And what we saw during COVID was it got to a point where you couldn't say, I don't think we could do X. Well, you can't say that. Why? People should be able to say it. We're all adults. We can make up our mind.
I agree. I think that I learned that you can't really do that in the United States, period, because of the commercial thing. When they sued Oprah for talking about the downfalls of meat, that should have alerted people here in this country that you cannot offend anybody who offends the commercial things here. And the commercial interest in the pharmaceutical companies replace people and who own and who were officials in the medical journal industry, as well as people at college universities and everything else, and they control the money that they get. So you can't, you got to really look at facts and bring people in. You can't call yourself having a discussion if you don't have the people there to defend your own.
Well, unfortunately, I'm getting a high sign from my main man, Kalia. That means we're just about out of time. I want to thank everybody. You can find me online. You can email me, garlandn@gmail.com. You can find me at Garland Nixon on Facebook, garland.nixon on YouTube. Garland.Nixon on Instagram, and I'm on YouTube, Garland Nixon, garlandn@gmail.com. Feel free to email me. Oh, I think we got something from the latest DJ spin. Oh, man, Hot Shot. This is awesome. I'm out.
WPFW presents Still We Rise, our 48th anniversary celebration on Friday, April 25th from 7 until 11 p.m. at Martin's Crosswinds in Greenbelt, Maryland. Entertainment will be provided by vocalist Navasha Dea and her trio, and WPFW programmers and poets Esther Everam and Zain El Amin. The evening includes an award ceremony, dinner, and dancing to the music of DJ James Funk. That's Still We Rise, WPFW's 48th anniversary celebration. Details at WPFWFM.org.